good to be in the house of the Lord. I want to also say, if you would like to, this afternoon, there'll be some of us still working over in the projects over next door. We've got a few doors. If you are good at hanging doors, if you're not, don't do it. If you're good at it, please come. We got a few light fixtures still left. If you can do that, we appreciate it. There's the cleaning that's still got to be done. I think we're trying to get everything situated for our crew that's coming in, our sound crew. That'll be coming in next week, bringing a lot of their stuff. So we're trying to get that done. And may still be a little bit of painting here and there, but if you can do some of those projects and clean some, we would appreciate anybody that wants to show up. I'll probably be out there kind of supervising. They've kind of kicked me out of the work, so I'll be dressed just like this. But I'll probably be out there about 2:30, 3 o'clock. And if you just want to come by for a couple hours and let's see if we can get a little done, we'd appreciate that. Really would. It's exciting. Really is. Last Sunday was our last Sunday night in this service, in this church building. And it was odd that it was the last one that we will have here. And I'm excited about the youth taking over this area and having their pool tables and stuff and everything set up and they're doing their thing. This week I really kind of wrestled with what is it that allows people to stay with or to keep going. Most of the people that we meet now, whether it's in work, church, whatever you find, you don't really even take serious anymore if they say, "Look, man, I'm with you." We just don't know how long they're with us. We know they mean it, but we're not sure how long they actually mean it. And it has nothing to do with that they aren't trying to be honest, that they're just telling you something to make you feel better. There's things inside of us that once we decide I'm going to finish or I'm going to complete or I'm going to stay with or I'm going to do, there's always going to be the areas of our life on the inside that have to take the battle. It's not the outside. That's never the problem. It's the inside of us that has the damage that has to be taken. It's the inside of us that has the growth that has to happen. And for a lot of people, that it surprises them what they run into. It surprises them what they're fixing to have to face. And so it's easier just to back off and to not deal with it. And this morning I want to deal with this topic, and I've just entitled it, Life Under the Broom Tree. Life Under the Broom Tree. Do you live your life under the broom tree? Do you live your life under a tree that's supposed to be shady? It's supposed to produce, but it's not even a tree that's built for shade. It's not even made for shade. In life, this is kind of what I want to deal with today. Go with me in your Bibles to the book of 1 Kings, the 19th chapter. And I'm going to read the 2nd through the 4th verse. Very familiar story, but I'm not going to deal with this as much as what normally people would pull this out and use this chapter 19 as one on depression, one of despair, but yet all of that comes. But I want to show you today how God deals with the inside of us, every one of us. How God reaches down and deals with the inside of us, and He wants to fix, and He wants to correct. And how does He go about keeping us engaged? How does somebody, I'm amazed now because I guess I've been here long enough now, when somebody, I eat lunch with them or something, they say, "Well, how long you been at Forest?" And I look at them, I say, "Well, this September will be 20 years. And it's just like, man. You can talk to people who are married and you can say, "How long you guys been married?" "Oh, we've been married 47 years. 47. It's getting to the point now to where to hear somebody say that they stay with or they stick with or they remain with something, that's so foreign. It's so much easier to just go the other route. Well, what's the difference? Let me show you in these scriptures.
And Jezebel sent a message unto Elijah, saying, So let the gods do to me, and more so also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them tomorrow by this time. And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and requested for himself that he might die, and said, It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers. Amazing. Just a short passage. If you were in chapter 18 reading about this same man, it would be a totally different story. He's calling down fire. He's doing incredible things. He's seeing rain come. Two of the greatest miracles in biblical history. Calling down fire on Mount Carmel, and then later seeing a servant go back and forth until he says, rain is coming. He girds up his loins, outruns a chariot, gets in front of Ahab and says, I told you it was going to rain. This guy is an incredible man. Yet at the same time, that's not his problem. At the same time, that's not the situation. Because when we break into chapter 19, all of a sudden everything quickly changes. It's not the outside, it's not the miracles, it's not having all the things happen around him. It's the inside of him now that's fixing to be challenged. It's the inside of who he is and what he thinks. Because when the enemy's going to come at you, he's not so much worried about where you're sitting, he worries about what you think. He worries about what you have going on inside of your mind or what you have reasoned in your heart to be the truth. And so, on the surface, we get lifted. On the outside, we get lifted. We get excited. We get enthused. But we don't live there. There's no way to live there. Once you get into that mindset, it's hard to break it. When I was growing up, this is what I ran into all the time when I would go to youth camps and different places, church camps. I would be there with a bunch of kids, and a lot of them a lot more messed up than I was. And I thought, we really need some serious stuff. We really need to get some stuff right in our lives. A man from the opening bell of services, they would be in the altars, falling out, and praying, and laying hands on each other and all week long. And then right after the service, go right back into there. And I would think, okay, God, if that's the way I'm going to live my spiritual life, I'm not going to make it. Because I can pretend on the outside and I can produce on the outside, but that's not what's broken. What's broken is on the inside. And Elijah, for the first time in the stories of Elijah, we have this picture of him, of the brokenness that has taken place on the inside. And the enemy finally finds a place where he can tap it, where he can hit it, where he can disrupt it. And so as soon as Elijah hears that, hey, from Jezebel, I'm going to kill you. I am going to have your life. I am going to do the same thing that you did to those prophets. I am going to do that to you. Jezebel immediately sends this message, and notice his reaction. The Bible says in verse 3 that he begins to run or fear for his own life. Now, he didn't fear for his life when he went to Mount Carmel. He didn't feel fear for his life when he was doing all the other things. But for the first time, everything has not gone the way he would like. And inside of him now, there is a crack. The crack has nothing to do with the outside, but it has to do with the heart. It has to do with what's going on inside the person. And what's going on inside the person is what's creating all the pain. Let me put it to you this way. Very few people that you'll ever meet will ever share with you their real guts. Very few people you will ever meet will ever share with you their real guts. I get a lot of attention for the stories that I tell about my own life and for the way I use my own life as illustrations, my past and different things and my problems and things that God brought me through. And people will say, I don't know how you know, I wouldn't talk about those kind of things, or I wouldn't say. But the fact is, very few people you'll ever meet in life will ever be really honest with you. I'm amazed sometimes when I meet people like this. I'll be shaking hands at the back door or something, and I'm, how you doing? Doing fine. Have a great week. Oh, you too, Pastor. You too. And they're smiling. They're going through the door. And all of a sudden, you'll see this one person come by with tears in their eyes, and he'll say, you have a great week. Can I talk to you just for a second? Yeah. We'll go off to the side. And all of a sudden, it's just like somebody just turned a faucet on. I was molested when I was 3. I got this happened to me when I was 12. I've been from this to this. I've gone through this and this. I've had this happen to me. I've had all this happen to me. I'm on my second marriage. Everything is falling apart, and everything is. And I'm thinking, now what's your name? We ain't even got your name out yet. And you're already sharing with me everything. But most of us, let's be honest, we just shake hands, move on down. How you doing? Doing fine. Doing fine. Because it's not the outside. As long as we don't think people can see it from the outside, then there's no reason to deal with the inside. If you have to ask me how I'm doing, then that must mean that I'm doing okay. I'm still holding it up. But now, let me look at you and say it this way. If I was to shake hands at the back door and I was just to go like this one Sunday and just say, man, you don't look good. You look like you got something on your heart. Do you think a lot of people would stop and say, you think so, Pastor? There's some stuff I've been wanting to talk with you about. See, if I look at you and say, have a good day, God bless you, then you think he don't see it. But if somebody looks at you and says, I've been worried about you lately. You doing all right? Well, there are some things that I'd like to talk to you about. But see, if I have to pull that from you, then even when I do, you're only going to give me what you have to give me. Very few people you're going to ever meet in life have the ability to be honest of how they feel and what they experience. Very few people have the ability. Elijah doesn't have the ability. He wants to be Elijah. He wants to be on Mount Carmel. He wants everybody to see him as the man who stops rain and the man who... And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a part of who he is. But there's another part of him that he doesn't want exposed. He doesn't want dealt with. He doesn't want... Let me tell you, when you know you tapped that place, I'll tell you when you know you've tapped it. When you can't get far enough away not to deal with it. When life begins to pressure you to the point to where you have to deal with that thing. And for the first time, when Jezebel looks at him and says, I'm going to kill you. He takes off running. And his servant who is with him, he doesn't want his servant to see it. He doesn't want him to be a part of it. So what do we do to the people that's around us that we don't want them to see that in us? We don't want them to see. It doesn't matter if it's our husband, our wife, our kids, or whatever. We'll tell them, now y'all just... Let me be for a while. I'm going to just go to my room for a while. I just need some space. It's not so all the time that we really need space. What it is we're afraid that the person close to us is actually going to see us as the person we are. We're so afraid that that person right beside us, our kids, or whatever, and we try to keep this facade going. And the problem is it's cracking because the inside is cracking. And now we're looking at people and we're like, they're going to see it. And all I need to do is get away. I need to get as far away from everybody. I just need some space. I just need some time. I just need to go to my room. I just need to go sit in my car. No, the problem is that no matter how far you run, you're still there. Elijah gets to Bathsheba and he says, Look, servant, you stay right here. You don't want to go with me where I'm going. I'm not going to be doing anything important. And he goes another day's journey, where? To a desert. To a desert. As far away as he can get from others. as far away as he can get. But guess who's still there? Him. He sits down at that time under a juniper tree. A juniper tree doesn't even have leaves. When I used to read this story when I was younger, I thought, well, he sits under a shade tree. He's sitting under a shade tree and he's getting some rest. You know, he's tired. He's sitting there and he finds a shade tree like we would. You know, if you want to go sit down, you don't find a bush. You find a shade tree. Go find an oak. Find something. But he's done got off into a desert, and there's not a lot of choices in a desert. There's not a lot of choices when you separated yourself of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. There isn't a whole lot of options. And so sitting there in the desert, he sees a leafless broom tree. Your version, if it's a NIV or something, we'll call it a broom tree. It's just a sticks. And he sits under this in the desert, and he sits under this tree, and there he is. The outside is still the same. If you were to meet him there and pass by, you say, aren't you Elijah? Yeah, I'm Elijah. But the inside of it, the inside for the first time is being exposed. It's being called out. And it's scary when that happens. It's very scary. Notice now, the pressure of not being yourself, the pressure of having to hold down who you really are, is an enormous amount of weight. One of the first things I told Elise when we got into ministry, I said, we won't live in a glass house. I grew up under ministries, and if you want to know why a lot of ministers and people like that fall and different people in authority like that fall, I'm going to tell you why. It's because you wouldn't really want to know who they really are. And they're so afraid that if they told you who they really are, you wouldn't like them anymore. And so part of their whole life is pressing down who they really are. And putting on clothes and dressing and learning to talk with these and thous and to say something without saying absolutely nothing. So that it gets to the point to where you know them, but you don't know them. You see them every week, but you can't get close to them because you probably wouldn't like them. You probably would find flaws and you would find cracks and you would find ways about them that you would think, well, that's not a godly person. That's not... So I told Elise when we first started, I said, we're just going to be who we are. I remember the first week we were at Forest, and I told him from the pulpit, I said, if you want to know the pastor that you got, I said, come by tomorrow about 1 o'clock. Come by, just drive by the church, and you'll see him. And they came by, and I had a Notre Dame cut-off sleeve T-shirt and my shorts, and I was sitting on a riding lawnmower mowing the grass, and as they drove by, why? Because I wear long cargo shorts. Now, don't get me wrong now. If you see me in my little plastic, little sweetie shorts now, you need to be worried about me. But I don't wear polyester breeches every day. I don't wear a suit to take showers. I'm a real... I grew up playing sports and wearing shorts and tennis shoes. And usually if you see me, I'm going to have blue jeans and tennis shoes and I'm going to have stuff on that's who I am. Why? Because the pressure of trying to be something that I'm not is one of the hardest pressures you'll ever have to tote. And a lot of us in this room, it's not the image we worry about, it's the pressure we have to deal with every single day. And when somebody starts pushing it, all of a sudden our temper starts rising. We're like, I got to get away. Why? Because you're going to see me. When something starts happening, look, I just need some time. Why? You're going to see me. I'm going to be exposed for who I am and the faults that I really have. And what happens in life under that tree, we think that that's where we can live. We think that we can live under a juniper tree. In our spiritual life, this is what people run to. This is what we want. Every most of us in this room, we want to live life under a juniper tree. No, there's not a lot of shade. No, there's not a lot of stuff going on because it's a desert, so I don't really have to look at anything or deal with anything. I don't have a lot of problems going on because out here in the desert, not a whole lot of action happening out here. I'm just sitting here watching the sand just flow by, and that's the way I like life. You know, if I was to ask you, what ministries did you do last week? Well, I didn't get a lot done last week. You know, I want to do some stuff. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You don't find a lot of stuff to do in the desert. You don't see a lot of those things. So you sit under the juniper tree. It's not really where I want to be. It's not shady, but it's better than being out there with Jezebel, and it's a whole lot better than people seeing me the way I am. And how am I going to live under this juniper tree? Well, here's how I live under a juniper tree. I wait for the angel of God to show up, which I show up every Sunday, and on Sunday I come, and I know I hadn't done much, and I know I don't expect much, and I know I don't believe much, and I don't really want anybody to touch me or talk to me. And if I can get out that back door after this service without having to talk with anybody or connect with anybody, I'll be happy. All I want is my blessing, and then I'll go back to sleep. You'd be amazed how many ministries, churches, live life under a juniper tree. Today's the day you want to meet them. Today's the day. I mean, people are dressed today. People are nice to you today. You can go into church buildings, and people that wouldn't even talk to you on Tuesday, you walk through that door, they'll shake your hand, and they'll smile at you, and they'll say, "Oh, it's so good to have you with us." Why? Because today the angel of the Lord has showed up, and He's cooking me dinner. And I'm getting my blessing, and I'm getting what I need, and this is the way I want to live. Life under the juniper tree. And Elijah, if he could, he wants to stay right there. I don't want to deal with this no more. I don't want to deal with no more problems. I don't want to hear Jezebel yap at me one more time. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do it. I've done had it. He goes to sleep. The angel wakes him up again in a few hours. "Wake up. Need to eat some more." Because the journey that you got to take is a long journey. He eats again. For 40 days he travels on that food. For 40 days. How long can you hold it together on a church service? How long can you hold it together on a church service? Now, you can usually make it through dinner, can't you, today? Let's say you get to dinner today and the waitress burns your food. You probably today wouldn't get all mad and cuss them out. Right? You'd probably just smile and say, "Look, I just been to church. And you know what? Look, we all make mistakes. I'm just going to eat it anyway. I know onions just tear my stomach up, but I know I told you not to put them in there, but you know what? You made a mistake. It don't matter. Don't take it back. I'm going to do it. And Lord, you see me." You think you'll make it through lunch today? Yeah, I hope most of you can make it through lunch. But now by this afternoon, and you're sitting at the house and somebody says something, or like me sitting at the house and the kids done wrecked the house again. And I know I gotta pick up and clean up and help straighten up, and the dishwasher thing is, and the dishes are all full again. I'm thinking, "Well, y'all can make a mess, but y'all ain't cleaning anything. Can I still hold it together then? Or am I like, goodgummit, look, we fixing to get some stuff straight around here. Can I hold it together through supper tonight? And then when I go to work tomorrow and I have to get up on Monday morning, it's Monday morning and I don't want to go to work today. And if I didn't have to do this, and I'm already in a bad mood, and it's going to be 40 degrees Tuesday. I've done looked at the weather thing. It's going to be in the 20s, and I'm sick of winter, and I'm tired of being cold, and I'm tired. You think by Tuesday morning when it's 28 degrees, and you think you're still going to be able to, how long can you go on a good church service? Because that's the way we live our lives, isn't it? And by Tuesday and Wednesday, we're like, oh, I can't wait till Sunday. I just can't wait till Sunday. You walk in on, Pastor Lott, I couldn't wait till Sunday got here. You don't know what kind of week I had. No, what's happening is you're living life under the juniper tree. You're living life, you get filled, and then it's like, well, how long will it last? How long can I go on it? How long? The angel said, look, you're only going to make it about 40 days on this. And you would think that maybe through this, he changes life. He changes his perspective. He changes the way he sees things. He changes... You ever thought you were delivered? You ever thought you were delivered? You ever went to an altar, prayed, felt God, boom, thought you were delivered? I'm telling you, God has delivered me from that. Pastor, I don't even want it no more. And then to see that same thing in a month or two, just, I don't even need to be thinking like that. Come on, you know you want to. One's not going to hurt you. God delivered you from drugs. God delivered you from alcohol, lying, cheating, stealing, whatever it is. And you thought, I'm delivered. Brother Lott, I'm never going to say another bad word ever again. God has cleansed my mouth. I knew it when the Holy Spirit hit me. I could just tell. It's like, whew. And then it comes back. Isn't that an awful feeling when you thought it was gone? Oh, y'all ain't ever had none of that. Well, there's a lot of things in my life, especially attitude situations, I have to constantly remind myself of. Because there's a way that I lived and a way that I did business and a way that I relationally connected with people. And it's easy for me to slip back into that because it works. And I say, God, just I don't want to be that. Thank you, Lord. I'm never going to be that person again. And then to have your wife look at you and say, look, listen to yourself talk. Isn't that irritating? To know I'm sounding like that again? I'm acting like that again? Anybody ever thought they were delivered? Well, look at Elijah. You would think if somebody met an angel twice, had him cook dinner for you twice, that would fix a lot of problems in you, wouldn't it? No. No, because most of us, when we come to church, most of our life is fixed from the outside. We feel better. We think better. I'm glad I went to church. Why? I feel better when I go to church. But why do we not continue in church? Because we eventually realize that the feeling goes away. It's one of the most devastating things to people I try to deal with in church and trying to keep them in church. Because why they fall out is the same reason they got in. It's their feelings. But a lot, I just feel like I'm God's got... You're right. And you know what? In about 40 days, you'll probably feel like nobody loves you. In about 40 days, you'll feel like life's no fair. In about 40 days, you're going to feel this way and you're going to feel that way. And what I've learned is that people who can't stay with or stick with or continue with or walk through is because the first thing that goes awry in their life is that they are continually judging their life by how they feel at the moment. I don't feel like going to church today. Well, that makes two of us. This was one of those mornings for me. If you saw me walking into church this morning, it was about 7:50. Right before I was supposed to preach. I come walking around the corner. I'm here. You want to be here? No. I'm saved. I know I'm going to heaven. It has nothing to do with trying to get pumped up or get something. I know I'm ready. I'm ready for another week. I just didn't feel this morning like coming. Then why did you come? Because I gave up that lifestyle a long time ago of deciding why I'm going to do something and whether it's going to be based on what I feel or not. If that's the case, there's going to be days I'm going to be living under a juniper tree. There's going to be days that life just doesn't go right. Let me tell you something. After the angel fed him twice, after he'd walked 40 days with that food, can I tell you where Elijah went back to? And let me just say it this way. Where did the angel of the Lord tell him to go? Somebody look that up for me. Where did the angel tell him to go? Where's that? Where did the angel tell him to go? Because he fed him twice and I mean, while you got all that spiritual stuff going on, you're getting here, having conversations with angels and you're getting fed and you're drinking cruises of water, surely you're getting direction, right? Can I tell you the one flaw in living under juniper trees? If you decide to live your life that way, let me tell you the one flaw in it. You live your life being filled and touched and moved, but no direction. That's why you'll write songs and the songs will come out like this. I went to the enemy's camp, took back what he stole from me. Took back what he stole from me. I don't know about you, but I've come to get my blessing. If nobody else gets it, I'm going to get it. Do you understand one of the flaws of our generation now? Is that we raise a generation that can praise like no other generation. You go to some of these concerts and worship places, and it's amazing to watch the worship. People piling in the altar, standing around for hours worshiping God. Want some more water? Want some more bake? You want some more cake? You need some more food? You need something? You want to feel better? Come on, keep praising. Let's praise. Let's praise. Let's praise. Let's praise. The only problem is when you look at them afterwards and say, with your finger pointed at them, now what are you going to do?
I'm going to try to do better.
You're telling me you just spent 6 hours at an altar, you just spent 6 hours in a building praising, and that's all you got? I can get more than that in 20 minutes in my prayer closet. I have to quit praying because I have to tell God I can't do no more than what you just said. I don't want to hear about next year or the next year or the next year. I can meet with any ministry in this church, and it doesn't take me 2 minutes to tell them my dream, vision, where I want it to go. They can bring up any idea, and I can tell you what I want it to look like. Why? Because that's constantly in my mind, in my heart. It has nothing to do with praise, nothing to do with worship, nothing to do. It has to do with direction in my life. Let me tell you what happens to people under the juniper tree. Here's what happens. Even if they move from one place of isolation to the next place of isolation, to the next place of isolation. The system never changes in their life.
You're not getting me.
Elijah left a desert under a leafless tree. The angel of the Lord never told him where to go. But Elijah already knew where he wanted to go. I want to go to the Mount of God. I want to talk to God directly. I want to hear from God directly. I want to hear what God has to say on it. I want God to tell me what's going on. Never once did he ask the angel, where should I go? Never once did he ask for direction. And 40 days later,
after this enormous miracle of eating dinner with an angel twice. He's in a cave, right back where he was, backed up in the backside of a dark cave, sitting there with his lips stuck out. He traveled 40 days in distance. He had traveled absolutely nowhere in life. And most of us, that's how we live. We can remember the last time God touched us. We can remember the last time we had a great service, or when God saved us, or when God... But most Christians that I meet, and I'm not saying they're not Christians, but most Christians that I meet have no idea what they're here to do right now. They have no idea why I'm here right now. I know I'm supposed to be in church. And I'd get involved if I knew what God wanted. No idea. Just living from one juniper tree. And I have to be real careful. I mean, you don't realize how hard my job is. Some of you don't. Let me tell you what my job is, usually every Sunday. My job is to cook good enough and to fill you up good enough that'll keep you alive enough so that you'll drag back next Sunday. I don't expect you to do anything next week. I don't expect nobody new to be coming with you next week. I don't expect you to come to me next week and say, "Brother Lott, I led somebody to God." I don't expect none of it. I'm just praying that you don't die before next Saturday of starvation. I'm praying that come next Sunday morning, you aren't too dead to look in the mirror and say, "I got to get to church." And if I preach a bad one, man, I know my attendance is going to go down. I don't even have to ask. It's like, oh. I tell Elise after every service, I usually drive away and I say, "What'd you think? Is it okay?" And if you're not careful, you'll think that I asked that question because I want to know if I did a good sermon. I could care less. I hoped it was good because there's some people in there, if they didn't get enough, they probably won't come back. If I didn't entertain them, impress them, because come on, let's be honest, there's no ministry next week. For the next 6 days, there's not going to be any ministry being done. They're just living from juniper tree to juniper tree, and hopefully they find a cave. And when they find the cave, they're looking for the next meal. They're looking for the next whatever. I know this isn't exciting. This is real. This is real life. This is why people have depression. This is why people struggle with different things, because this is how they live their lives. 40 days and he's right back in a cave. Let me tell you why. I'm going to surprise you. Because you have patterns in your life. Look at the person beside you and tell them, say, "You have patterns in your life." See, I've been married to Elise for 20 years, and wonderful 20 years, but here's the flaw in being married to Elise for 20 years. She knows me. She'll look at me and say, "Why are you mad?" I'm not mad. "Oh yeah, you're mad. Because whenever you get mad, you do that with your teeth. You grind your teeth when you're mad." I don't grind my teeth, do I? See, when you hang around somebody, they start to learn your patterns. That's why some of you end up divorced and you end up broken up. You know why? Because you can't tell the same junk to them no more because they already know you. That's why the fun's all gone.
You can't tell that same old lie or anything because they look at you like, look, just save it. No, I'm telling you, just hush while you're ahead. Because they don't even listen anymore. Why? Because they know you. They know the patterns in your life. They know what you do on a pattern. And it works the same way spiritually. You have patterns in your life. You live your life by patterns. And when it comes to ministry, that's what we do. When I do counseling, my counseling involves this. It's never trying to get you to do something I want you to do. Counseling is only this. It's trying to get you to finally do what you know inside you're supposed to do. A good counselor does not try to manipulate or to try to get a person to do. What they do is they get them talking. Why? Because if once the person's talking, they will reveal to themselves exactly what they think and what they feel. That's why this texting now is so incredible. That's the one part I do like about it. I do love Facebook and I do love it for that reason. Because people that you think you knew, just listen to their Facebook. Listen to why? Because the more they talk and the more they take selfies and the more they do, they can look at you on the outside and say, no, this is who I am. No, baby, I got the picture right here. I know who you are. You a snow bunny. I know what you are. You can tell everybody else what you think you are, but let's be honest, I got enough info here now. I'm like a psychiatrist. I've got months of info. I've been sitting there, you've been sitting on the couch, relating and reviewing, and every time you send out a text, well, I tell you what, they treat me, oh, I like that attitude. I know more about you now. Every time you send a picture, every time you do, what you're doing is you're revealing the information of who you really are, and we get to really figure out the person inside. Saves me a lot of time. Somebody says, I need to meet with you, Pat. Well, let me look at your Facebook before you come. Oh, that's not me. Oh, it's really you. That's really, really you. And in life, it's that way. When I'm dealing with people, all I'm trying to do is get them to talk. And the answer is there. Let's be honest. If you're in this room, you know if you're a liar. You know you lie. You don't need me to point my finger at you and tell you, you a liar. No, I just get you talking long enough and we just kind of look at each other like. And you look at me like, I'm going to be quiet now. Why? Because I'm lying out of my ear. And you know I'm lying. People already know. You know if you're lazy. All you have to do is look at your work record. Look at your track record. Are you lazy?
I'm not lazy. I do what I want to do.
Well, there's a lot of don't want to do in you. And Elijah has a pattern. 40 days didn't cure his pattern. That's why that thing that you thought was gone, it came back. Because here's why it came back. It wasn't because God didn't deliver you of it. It's because there were certain patterns in your life that keep recurring, and those patterns keep bringing that same thought to your mind. I remember when we went to a restaurant down on the coast. We went and rode our motorcycles. And when we did, they have what they call, for dessert, they give you like free rum cakes. And normally a rum cake, you would think in your mind, they cook it, the rum in it, and it's burned off. But then there's some places that decide they're going to pour some back on the top. And I knew this. I didn't say anything. I figured, and so I ordered something else. But several of the guys and ladies, they said, hey, we're going to do this. Hey, I want to taste that rum cake. And I was like. So they brought it in, and Kenneth was sitting there. And there's nothing wrong. He wasn't trying to do anything wrong. But here's what I'm talking about, patterns. As soon as Kenneth tasted, as soon as it come into his mouth, his body immediately, his whole face turned red because his body for so many years of his life was used to a pattern. And one thing led to the next thing, led to the next thing. And because he had not kept that pattern going, he didn't have any problems. But the moment, I'm talking about the moment, the taste hit his taste buds, his mind and his body went into reaction. See, that's what causes you the problem. It's not that you haven't been delivered. It's not that your spirit isn't set free. It's that if I go back and I hang out with those same old friends and I do those same things and I sleep in the same place and I do all of that, what happens is my patterns start to want to come back. And for the first time, Elijah, when Jezebel looked at him and said, "I'm going to kill you," his body, his patterns kicked in. And up until then, he was Elijah calling down fire and everybody was around him. But now he's Elijah, the one with human patterns, and the patterns scare him. And he's like, "Look, get away from me." Why? Because I want to die. I don't ever tell people this, but I want to die. I don't like to. I'm going to say this in the desert by myself under a juniper tree. "God, I'm no better than my fathers. Just let me die." He gets to the cave 40 days later. He's changed locations, but he hasn't changed patterns. And God shows up, this great psychiatrist, and he does this beautiful thing. He just says, "Elijah, what are you doing here?" Remember now, the answer's in Elijah. The answer's in Elijah. "What are you doing here, Elijah?" "Lord, I've been very jealous for you. Nobody loves you like I do. In fact, I'm the last prophet you got alive. Everybody else has quit you. Everybody else is gone." What keeps bringing you back? You ever wonder that? What keeps bringing you back to the juniper tree? What keeps putting you back in the cave? Can we just talk seriously? What keeps putting you back where you know you don't belong? It's only two reasons. One is this. Your perception is that you're the only one right and everybody else is wrong. The only thing, number one, that will put you back under a juniper tree is if you believe that you're right and everybody else is wrong. Because the whole world's messed up just because of this. I mean, let's be honest. The whole world's messed up just because people won't do what I need them to do. If I could get my kids to do this, the life would be great. If I get my wife to do this, life would be great. If I could get my job to do this, it would be great. If everybody just do what I wanted them to do, life would be great. This whole world's messed up but me. I'm the only sane person in the room. Some of you are sitting in this room right now. You're the only smart person in this room and you know it. The rest of us are just all idiots. You're the only one that's got your right senses, right mind. If we all just do what you knew, wouldn't life be better? Elijah is struggling. Why? Because if everybody would just do what I need them to do, we would already be past this. I called down fire. I killed the prophets of Baal, but nobody loves you, God. I did all this and nobody will get serious. Jezebel should have got saved, but she didn't get saved. She wanted to kill me. Crazy woman. I can't deal with these crazy people. I can't deal with this crazy world. And in me, I deal with the same thing. You do too. The world would be better, Sam, if people would just do what I need them to do. If my kids and my family and my co-workers and everybody would just... I mean, if they just listen to me. I'm right. Everybody's wrong. Why do people keep telling me I need to change? I don't need to change. They need to change. If you're in this room today, one of the reasons you'll stay inside your cave is because you have a perception that everybody else doesn't see it the way you see it. And they're wrong. It'll even eventually get to the Bible. You carry it so far, you'll eventually read the Bible and you'll say, "That book's outdated. That book, you know, is written by men. It was written..." Why? Because I'm right. The book is wrong. You'll even look at the Bible. It's been around thousands of years and can't nobody touch it. But yet you look at it, it's wrong. It's written by people. That's not relevant today. How can you do it? Because you're right. And if everybody would just accept you for the way you are and coddle you and treat you the way you feel like you need to be treated, life would be better. If life was the way I would want it, I would come in this afternoon to my house, this Sunday afternoon, after preaching twice, and I would sit down and my kids would have already cleaned the house. I mean, spotlessly cleaned the house, dishes washed. I would come in and they would hand me the remote to the television and say, "Dad, here, sit down. Let us here. I'm going to put your shoes in your closet, Dad. And here, put your feet up. You got the remote. Watch what you want to this afternoon." My wife would be in the kitchen cooking, and she'd say, "Tim, in about 20 minutes you can sit down. I've got everything ready. Dinner's ready." Life would be good. You know what? Nobody sees it the way I see it. Does your life kind of fit like that sometimes? Nobody sees it the way, if they just do it the way I think it should be done, life would be great. That's what's keeping you back. It's the perception that it's not the way it should be, the way I want it to be. Number two is this. The only other reason would be if you are the victim. There's only two ways to see it. Either I'm right and everybody's wrong, or I'm the victim. And that's what Elijah's sharing. Oh, I've been faithful to you. I've suffered for you. I'm the only one left. I've endured all this hardship. Nobody's been through what I've been through. God, you're lucky to have me. I know you wouldn't say that out loud, but you think it a lot of times. I tell you what, that church is lucky to have me because this morning I don't feel like going. And I'm going to tell you, it's all I can do to get there. They're blessed to have somebody like me. Just a victim. And when you're trying to battle those emotions all the time, that the world just won't do what I need it to do, and the world's against me, and nobody loves me, and it'll put you in a cave. Brother Lot, how in the world do you come out of a cave? How do you break the patterns? First, you talk. Talk to God. I'm going to tell you a good way to do it. Write it down. I find that when I write down my complaints, they sound real dumb on paper. They sound good in my head, but they really sound dumb on paper. Sometimes I'll sit down and I'll just, "God, I'm the only pastor in the state of Mississippi that cares about you. And you know what? I'm sick, God. I'm just gonna do youth pastoring. I'm through with this junk. I'm tired with it and let somebody else have it. Let some, everybody wants to be the boss and the king of the hill. Let them go ahead. Just knock themselves out." And I sit there in my room and I read that. That's sad. That's sad. That won't even hold water. That's sad. It sounded good in my head. And it sounds good in Elijah when he's up in the cave and nobody's there and he's only talking to himself. Ain't that right? That's right. But when God walks up and says, "What's wrong with you? Tell me out loud what's wrong with you. I'm the only one. Nobody loves you. If it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have a ministry on this earth, God. I'm it. And if they kill me, it's over. You're through, God." God looks at Elijah and says, "Elijah, I'm going to pass by this door. And I'm going to pass by you, and when I do, I want you to listen to me." First way out of the cave is to be vocal. Make your complaint known. Let it ring in your ears. Not talking to yourself, not convincing. Write it out. Say it out loud. Pray it out to Him.
God, this hurts. God, it's not, I don't feel fair. It doesn't. Because all that is your flesh. It's what you feel. The thing about feelings is the longer you try to suppress them, that's where we get the word depressed. When somebody is depressed, they're pressing down who they are. And whether they're in a situation or a circumstance, what brings on a depression is simply this. Either I feel like nobody's understanding me and will do what I want to do and life is not fair, number one. Or it's number two, nobody cares about me, nobody loves me, and I'd be better off out of this world. It's called depression. Sometimes I talk to my mom. My mom's my favorite wall. And I love to hear her laugh at me. I know it sounds crazy, but I love to hear my mom laugh at me. Ever since I was young, she'd come in my room and she'd sit on the edge of my bed and she'd say, "What's wrong, Tim?" "Nothing." "Come on now, talk to me." "Oh, this is wrong. Nobody likes me. I ain't got no girlfriend. I ain't got this. Nobody cares. And I can't find no good girl. I'm just, all my friends are sorry." And she'd give me that laugh. Just shake her head like, "Damn. You know God's got you. You know God's going to, you know." And she just kind of slowly peace. You ever have people in your life like that? You need to keep people in your life like that. You always have God, but it's fun if you can find flesh for those people too. If you got a mom or a dad who does that for you, you better be thankful. Because they you can cry in front of them and you can laugh in front of them. You can share all of your junk. And they usually just laugh or shake their head or just tell you, "It's going to be all right." They just keep you pointed. They don't let your flesh keep you so pressed down. You need people in your life. Otherwise, you're going to have to find a juniper tree. And there's no answers under a juniper tree. Find the person. Second is this. When you have deflated, then wait for the presence. What we want is we want the presence without the deflation. That's what Elijah had been living. Elijah had been living a life of being able to call down fire, but nothing fixed on the inside. Elijah could preach sermons. Elijah could bring rain and stop it. But he didn't want to deal with his inside. Second is this. When the presence of God, God said to Elijah, "I'm going to pass by. And when I do, you listen to me." Fire, earthquake, wind. Elijah stayed in the cave. What was he learning? People always ask, why did he do that? Why did God pass by in those ways first? Because you got to understand who Elijah was. Elijah would have loved to have been the Elijah of the fire. But he's already been the Elijah of the fire. He's already been the Elijah of the wind. He's already been the Elijah of the rain. He's already been the Elijah of the storm. He's already been that kind of Elijah, and he can't find his answers. So he don't move. Years ago, I used to wonder, Lord, why do people, I mean, I can feel the presence of God. Joel was saying it this morning, and you could feel the presence of God. And man, all you had to do was just jump out and come to God and receive. But what we fail to think about a lot of times is how many times, of all of us in this room, how many times have we jumped out over our years in church? How many times did we run to an altar? How many times did we have somebody lay a hand on our head or pray for us or put oil on us or whatever your background is? How many times did you ever have eight women gather around you like when I grew up and six or eight women gather around you, start laying hands all over your head and praying in tongues and man, you could feel the power of God and you would think, okay, this time.
It was wind and it was fire and it was rain, it was storm, it was powerful. And when I went back to my seat, I did the same thing I always did. I would say, I got it now. I got it now. But 40 days later, when it came back, it was devastating. How do you go back to those eight ladies and say, it didn't work? You can't, so you don't talk about it. Tim, how you been doing since we prayed for? Doing fine. Some of you in this room, you've been through the wind and you've been through fire and you've been through rain and you felt the power of God hit you and you knew what it was like to be saved or set free. And you thought, I'm free. Man, the first time I am free. Then to have that thing, that thought, that feeling, that emotion, walk back in the door and say, hey, I thought you were gone. No. I just went away for a little while. So Elijah stays backed up in the cave. All of this going on the outside, powerful stuff taking place, but Elijah stays right there. Finally, a small, still voice he hears. An amazing thing happens. Elijah grabs his mantle, throws it over his head. Fire doesn't move him. Wind doesn't move him, but when he hears a small, still voice, he throws the mantle over his head, and the Bible says he walks to the door of the cave. I don't think you understood just what I said. When he hears the voice, he girds himself and he walks to the door of the cave. There's some things I can do, and there's some things I can't do. I can give you a 40-day reprieve if you would like. I can give you a 7-day reprieve if you would like. I can pray for you, and you can feel goosebumps, and you can feel the presence of God come off of me onto you, and you can think, man, I got it. But I'm going to tell you what life changes. Not from the outside, but it changes when that small, still voice drags you out of your cave and says, come to the door. Come to the door. Why? How do you stay married for 20 years? You listen for the voice. If I was living my life with Elise, and she's the greatest wife anybody could have, but if I was living my life from earthquake to firestorm to, let me put it this way, date night or anniversary or third honeymoon or it wouldn't work. It's the small, still voice that says, you need to go hug her today. You need to do something right now. You need to say something to her right now. It's those little things. There used to be a country song I used to love to hear. It said, this guy looked at it, he said, what can I give you for all you've done in my life? Shall I give you diamonds? Shall I give you gold? Shall I give you this? Shall I buy you a house? Shall I get you a car? And the song was real simple. It just says, she looked at him and said, I won't take less than your love, sweet love. I won't take less than your love. Love hears that voice. That's why you can't describe it with one word. It's gentle, it's kind, it's long-suffering, it's temperate. It's why? Because it's all of those things constantly. It's all of those things. It's a kind word. It's a soft voice. It's every little thing. And Elijah is learning. It's the voice. Let me tell you what will get you through high school and through school and keep you who you want to be. Listen to the voice. It's not going to be a forward trip where you all have this great service and come back and in 3 weeks wonder why we can't keep it together.
It's the voice. It's the voice I listen to every single day. What got Elijah in that cave was the fact that he stopped listening for a voice. I don't need to tell you what you need to do. I don't need to tell you how you need to treat somebody. I don't need to tell you what you need to quit. You already know all the answers. Every one of you in this room know the answers. The question is, will you listen to that voice? Most of us don't. We just get excited on the outside and do nothing from the inside. The reason I could stay married for 20 years is because of a voice. The reason I've been 19 years here is because of listening to a voice. Tim, let's go here. And God, through that voice, changes Elijah's perspective. From that moment, Elijah quit living his life off of feelings. He lived it off perspective. Elijah, change what you're headed for. Elijah, you got stuff to get done. Elijah, quit looking at what, quit feeling, quit thinking about what everybody else. You do what you're supposed to do. Will you stand? With every head bowed, every eye closed. I want you just to be quiet for just a second. I want you to listen to my voice, and I just want you to let God talk to your heart. When you leave this place today, what is it you're supposed to do? What are you supposed to do today which involves your marriage? Well, as soon as the other one does it, as soon as she does it or he does it, then I'll... That ain't what I said. I said, when you leave here today, what are you supposed to do? Those kids of yours, what are you supposed to do today that you haven't done? And I'd like to tell you that, man, I'm good at it. Can I be honest with you? There's some places that God is dealing with me that I just hadn't wanted to deal with. In our house, I know God for the last several months has been dealing with me about turning the electronics off. And me and my kids playing games together and spending more time instead of just sitting on the couches. And we spend time together, but it's not the memories I want to make. But it seems easy because they're happy sitting there watching a movie with me and I'm happy watching it with them and we all watch something until we get tired and we all go to sleep and I go to bed usually most of the nights thinking, man, we should have played Monopoly. And it hit me real hard yesterday because my son Nathan went to a friend's house. And it's always funner at somebody else's house. And I said, what did y'all do? He said, we just played out in the yard and did this and did this. And God spoke to me one more time. What is God saying to you? What part of that life has nothing to do with a juniper tree? Has nothing to do with you getting something just to keep you going. But what are you supposed to leave here and do today? Who are you supposed to treat nicer? And who are you supposed to hug? Or who are you supposed to say I love you to? And who are you supposed to forgive? And who are you supposed to... The beautiful thing is, you don't even need me to tell you. You already know. You just got to do it. Father, for that person in this room right now, it's not a hurricane. It's not a firestorm. It's not rocks breaking together because of the wind. But it's that voice inside of their heart. God, my prayer today is that You give them courage, perspective. They're not a victim, and they're not always right. But if they'll listen to that voice, You will guide them into all truth. Father, I believe today that people are going to leave here and things are going to be said. People are going to be forgiven. Actions are going to be made today that should have already been made. And they're not going to have to depress who they are. In Jesus' name, amen.